Good one. If you can't hear me, please move up. But for those of you who were sitting in the last row last week and I gave you a hard time, feel free to sit at the back if you want. It's just that the room is warmer in the front. So. Only one door is open, it's fine. We'll begin with our prayers. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavit Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So welcome back, everyone. I was reminded last week that we have a lot of people who watch the classes online, so I keep forgetting to welcome them as well. So welcome to all of you who are watching these classes later on once they're uploaded. And we'll start with this verse, which we are taking as a prayer verse. Kakhaluna lankriyate Drishta Drishtartha Sadhana Patiyan Amuya Kantastitaya Prashnotara Ratna Malikaya Kim Samsare Saram Bahushopi vichintyamanamidameva Bahushopi vichintyamanamidameva Kim manujeshu ishtatamam Kim manujeshu ishtatamam Swaparahitaya udyatam janma Parahitaya udyatam janma Madireva moha janakahakaha Madireva moha janakahakka snehaha kechadasyavaha vishayaha kabhavavalli bhavavalli trishna kovairi yahtu an udyogaha Yogaha kasmad bhayamiha kasmad maranat andhatihako vishishyate andhatihako vishishyat ragi kashuraha yolalana lochana banaihi Yo lalana lochana ba nacha vyadhitaha. So we saw up to here last week, and this verse is talking about, with Valentine's Day coming up, Cupid's arrow, the arrows that the one who is brave, the one who is not distracted, even when pierced by these arrows of desire, for whatever, even though this verse is implying the flirtatious advances of women, we saw, or men, it just means anything that our sense objects get attracted to, the one who is not detracted or distracted from what is really the important thing, that person is called brave. Patum karnanjali bihi, patum karnanjali bihi, kim amrutamiha yujyate, sadupadeshaha. So kim patu, kim amrutam patum. Patum means to be drunk, to drink from pa. So what is to be drunk? Amritam, like nectar. So in Puranic stories, nectar symbolizes immortality. Many of you have heard of the story where, I forget the name of the god who comes up from the milky, churning of the milky ocean, comes up with a pot of nectar, the nectar of immortality. So this is, it implies what is to be drunk, like this nectar, which means, nectar meaning it's very sweet, very desirable. And in our in this sense, it stands for knowledge. So what is to be drunk? Kim amrutam partum? What is to be drunk like nectar? Karanaanjali bihi. Karana means ears. So what is to be an anjali? Anjali is the anjali mudra, like when we stand at the altar and pray. So how do your ears form an anjali mudra? Obviously, it's a metaphor. It's poetic. And what it means is, what should we be hearing constantly? How should we be hearing anything? Anything in the sense of scriptures with respect. What should we be receptive to hearing? And hearing in a very receptive way, with respect, with care, with attention. Like when we stand at the altar, we are usually standing with our posture is very one of humility. We are bowing down, or even when you do the namaskara at the altar, you're bowing down with a prayer-like attitude. So what should we be receptive to hearing with respect? Here, and yuj meaning to focus or to meditate. So basically the question is, what should we be focusing on in our lives? And the one word answer is sat upadesha. Upadesha means teachings. Actually, this word can be translated two ways. The compound word sat upadesha means sat meaning good. So good teachings, or it could also mean teachings of a good person, teachings of a saint, teachings of a guru. And we've seen this in several verses already. Satsanga is really what they're talking about. Satsanga in any form. What we have here is question answers, in bhajans, as kirtans. Basically, you are hanging out with good people. And the reason for why satsanga is so important, there is a verse from Bhajagovindam. This is a hymn attributed to Shankaracharya. It's a very beautiful hymn. Bhaja Govindam literally means praise the Lord. That sounds very Christian, not in that way. Take the names of the Lord. Bhaja, worship or sing the praise of Govinda, of Krishna. And this verse in Bhaja Govindam, it's the verse, ninth verse, talks about why satsanga as a spiritual practice is so important. So it says, satsangatve nissangatvam. So satsangatve, when there is sangha association with sat, with good people, or with wise people, what happens? Nissangatvam. Sangha association, nisanga dissociation. There is dissociation or not non-attachment. You are free from. Free from what? Free from asat people, adharmic activities. Nisangatve, the second line, when there is this dissociation from adharmic activities, what happens? Nirmohatvam. We get discernment, we get free from, moha means delusion, nirmoha, we get free from delusion. We get viveka, we get discernment. And what happens with nirmohatvam, once you have nirmohatve, when there is viveka, when there is clarity on what is to be done, what is to be not done, what happens? Nishchala tatvam. We get nishchala, clear knowledge of the truth, the knowledge of reality. knowledge of our own true nature, our own real nature. And nishchala tatve, when we have that clear knowledge, what happens? Jivan muktihi. One becomes a jivan mukta. One gets liberated while alive. So this jivan mukta concept, there are two kinds of muktis. One is a jivan mukti and one is a videha mukti. Deha means body. Jivan means living while alive. So you get mukti, you get freedom, freedom from suffering while living, versus videha mukti. When you have videha, when you do not have a body, means when you are no longer alive. So the bhakti traditions describe five types, I think, of this videha mukti. Once you're dead, what happens? So most of these bhakti traditions, you know, Hinduism has a concept of heaven and hell, but not in the Abrahamic or biblical way. So for Hindus, the bhakti traditions, they believe that when you die, if you have lived your life doing good, if you have accumulated a lot of punya karma, you will go to Swarga Loka, either with Vishnu, Vishnu Padam, you go and sit at the feet of Vishnu, or you go to hang out with Shiva, sit and meditate there. But in Advaita Vedanta, all that heaven is still temporary. You are there. Literally, there's no place like a heaven. Anyone here has seen heaven or hell? No, right? If we have, we're probably not back here. So that place concept of a location for heaven and hell is not there in Advaita. So whether you go to heaven or not after death, videha, how does it affect us? When we are continuing to suffer and struggle in this life while being alive. So what happens satsanga, the verse begins, the shloka begins with satsangatve. When there is satsanga, when there is association with good teachings, good people, we get jivan mukti, meaning we get enlightenment, we get freedom from our suffering while alive. And obviously that's more important than what happens to us when we die. Kim gurutaya moolam yat etat aprarthanam nama. So these next several verses in this text, remember this text has little bit of hardcore Vedantic teachings. There is a lot of teachings on dharma, adharma, on emphasis on our personal growth. There's also emphasis on society, on how to become a better, how to leave this world a better place for our generation. So the next several verses is, there are interweaving questions and answers talking about personal growth, but there's also questions on how does society become better, societal growth. So kim moolam, what is the foundation or what is the root? Moolam literally means a root of a tree, but here what is the root of gurutaya? Guruta is a feminine noun meaning importance or dignity. So what is the root of, what is the cause of importance, of dignity? Meaning what makes a person deserving in society? How does a person acquire name and fame in society? Yat etat aprarthanam nama. And the answer is nama, that whose name is, yat nama, yat etat nama, that literally that this, the one, the that whose name is aprarthanam. Prarthana meaning, it can mean prayer, but when we pray, most of us, when we pray at the altar, what are we doing? Asking, begging, pleading, requesting. Of course, many of us are mature, especially in this audience, and we are also offering a prayer as thanksgiving, as a thanking God for all the blessings we have in our life. But I think many times, most of the time, we have so many problems that we forget to see the blessings that we already have. So prarthana means asking, requesting, and aprarthana is the opposite of that, meaning somebody who is, whose name and fame, whose position in society is not asked for but is earned. So somebody is who is not demanding that you be, that he or she be respected, but by his or her own actions, words, speech, actions, you are commanding the respect. You are getting the respect without asking for it. You know, I just thought of it. So many times in families, I think this happens a lot in, probably more in Indian families than Western culture. The head of the family, which is usually the father, demands that the child listens to him or her, him. Sometimes the mother is the head of the family. I don't know what happens in your family, but you can think. So many, many times this works because, you know, as obviously as children, obviously when children are very young, they need to be taught values, they need to be taught what, how to live in life. So they, and they have fear of the parents, right? The parents are God to them. But what happens when the child becomes a teenager? How much can the father demand this respect from the child? Very likely the child is going to bang the door on your face, the teenager. So the one who has, one who is deserving of respect in society is just like that parent. You get respect by your behavior. And parents sometimes, I know it's very hard to be a parent. I think it's the toughest job in the world. But many times parents don't realize that their behavior, the children are like sponges. You know, they observe how, what the behavior of their parents is around them. And they may not say it in so many words, but that comes out as they, as their behave, in their behavior as they grow older. So this respect is to be, cannot be demanded. It's just like love. So when you, can you have, command anybody to love you? How does that work? You can give love. You can give love unconditionally. You can give love with conditions. With most of us, that's what our love is, with a lot of conditions, with a lot of hooks attached. But you can give love unconditionally. That's the love of an enlightened person. But how can you make somebody love you? Somebody loves you or not loves you out of their own will, you know, out of their own emotion. They can, and many times somebody can love you a lot at one time, and the same person can allow you at many times. Allow is Pooja Swamiji's spin on A-L-L-O-W-A-L-O-V-E. So this verse is saying the cause of greatness, the cause of the foundation for respect is really humility. And this is brought out in, you know, I've mentioned this Bhagavad Gita chapter 13 set of values, beginning with amanitvam adambitvam. The first word is amanitvam. So developing, cultivating this character of humility, of giving love, of giving respect. When you give respect, you get it, you know. Kim gahanam stri charitam kashchaturaha yona khanditah tena yona khandit. So kim gahanam? Gahanam means what is, kim gahanam, what is inscrutable, inexplicable, what is inaccessible. And I'm sure many of you won't, especially the ones with the 2X chromosomes in the room, are not going to like the answer. The answer is tricharitam. So charitam literally means moving or going about. Like in Ramayana, it begins with Ramasya charitam. What are the activities of Rama in the forest? So what is the practice? What is the charitam? What is the behavior or the actions of who? Of women. And why only women? Again, we have to think about when this text was written, a male-dominated society. But there is some, many of you have read this. I think this book came out in the 70s or 80s. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So there is some science to show differences in the brains of men and women, in their communication styles, in their emotional needs. But women aren't the only ones who are inscrutable, who are gahanam, who are difficult to understand. You just have to ask any couple. You know, when I see couples through our non-professional way to give them, couples who are going through some marital discord or disharmony. And if I see them both together at the same time, I'm usually not saying anything because they have enough to say about each other. So if you ask any couple, they're going to say, he doesn't understand me at all. She doesn't understand me at all. That's a very common fact. And how does anybody know your intent unless you tell them? How can we expect anybody, even our partner, whom we've been married to for 30 years, 40 years, whatever, how can anyone understand you if you're not sharing what you're thinking? They're not mind readers. So the main cause of problems in a relationship, in any relationship, be it a spousal relationship, be it children and parents, be it co-workers, is due to lack of proper communication. And key to any successful, underline that, any successful relationship is open communication. I know in families, you know, with partners, over a period of time, you end up, your patterns of interaction with each other get set in a certain way. If it works, that's great. But many times, you know, people been married for 40, 50, 60 years towards their end of their life, and they're still so miserable because they don't have a good relationship with their partner. So key to any good relationship is being open. And the verse that we saw, the Bhagavad Gita verse 7, Amanitvam Adambitvam, that verse, the second quarter says, Amanitvam Adambitvam Ahimsa Kshantir Arjavam. Arjavam is a key word there. Arjavam really literally means straightforwardness, honesty, sincerity, open-heartedness. And I like to think of it as really alignment with what you're thinking, what you're saying, and how you're acting. So it's very important whenever we say something is to be sure that arjavam is there. And if, so supposing, I gave this example with children when we used to have children's classes. If you see a friend of yours who's like wearing some clothes which don't look great, you know, imagine 8-10-year-old girls, and you go up and tell your friend, you look horrible, just because that's what you're thinking, that obviously is very hurtful. So in Bhagavad Gita, we'll see in later verses, even in this text, arjavam should come with a whole bunch of satyam, priyam, hitam, speaking the truth, speaking what is pleasant, speaking what is beneficial. So that's, but this arjavam, this straightforwardness, saying, in a relationship, in a close relationship, saying what you think, and then, so this happens a lot. The spouse, one partner will say what they think, and that's it. Not willing to listen to what the other person is saying. So I'm sure all of you experience this, or have experienced this, or continue to experience this 40, 50 years into your married life. Is saying what you want, what aligning with what, not only what is in your mind, but being willing to be open and patient to listening to what the other person is doing. It's not an easy practice. It's not an easy skill. It takes a long time to develop, especially with somebody who you've had a relationship for many years, because those patterns of behavior just come up. The next question, chaturaha kaha. Kaha, who is chaturaha? Clever. And the answer is yaha na khanditaha. Khand means to break or to destroy. So the one who is not broken by what? Tena, by that. By that meaning one who is not taken in, who is not gullible to other by other people's words and actions. And basically it is meaning one who has viveka, discernment, and vairagya, dispassion or detachment. Such a person is clever because he or she is not swayed by the words, by the charitam, by the actions or the behavior of somebody else who is difficult to understand. And another interpretation of this charitam can also mean maya. Maya in the technical sense in Vedanta is that which is not true, that which is not as real as Brahman. And there is a story about sage Narada. You know, the sage Narada is a celestial being. He had open visa to go from one loka to another. He could travel without a passport, without a visa. And he went to Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, once and said, I've studied all about this Maya. I understand intellectually what Maya is, but I don't know what the experience is. So please teach me. So Vishnu told him, okay, I will teach you, but go down to earth, go to the Ganges River and get me some water. So sage Narada comes down to the earth. He is at the Ganga getting some water, and he sees a beautiful woman there. And of course, he falls in love with the woman. Over time, they get married. They have 7 children, and, you know, 12 years have gone by. Remember, he came to get a cup of water for Lord Vishnu. After 12 years, there is a fire. The hut they're living in catches fire, and his wife, and unfortunately all the children, die. So Narada is absolutely inconsolable, and he cries out to Vishnu, please help me, that begging, beseeching. So Vishnu comes and he says, so Narada explains to him what happened. You know, I've my wife and my children, everything, I've lost everything in life. And Vishnu asks him, where is my cup of water? So the story is saying, this is how maya or behavior of others can drive us down a path that is so arduous and so long, takes us a long time to come back to. We can get carried away very easily by stri charitam, by the lalana alochana of anybody. Kim dukham asantoshah, kim laghavam adhamato yancha. So kim dukham, what is unhappiness, what is sorrow, what is suffering? And the answer is asantoshaha. It seems like an obvious answer. Santosha means completeness, fullness, happiness. So the absence, asantosha, implies there is absence of contentment, but implies from within. we are not content, we are constantly seeking, and we are unable to be satisfied, to be triptaha, to be happy, to be content in this life. And just to make sure, so this dukkham can, is also means sorrow or sadness. Sadness by itself has many reasons, can come because of many things. One, it can be a situational sadness that we feel. Perhaps you've lost a loved one. Perhaps there is a divorce, you're going through a divorce. Perhaps there is a job loss, financial insecurity. Or it could be the political situation that we're saying. So that sadness or that feeling of everything is going under going out of control can be external. It could be brain chemistry. There could be chemical imbalances in the brain because of which we feel sad and go into deep depression. All those things need to be addressed. If there is a sadness because of a chemical imbalance or because of a situation in your life, you can get therapy, you can go to a psychiatrist, get medications, get treatment. Vedanta is not going to help you address that situational sadness or that situational sorrow that comes because of an event in your life. What we can do is get the treatment that we need to, understand what is causing that sadness for us, and then come to Vedanta, do Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, and ultimately, over time, and it's not going to be, a month or 2 months, it's going to be a lifelong, that santosha, that contentment within is going to come only when we recognize that true source of ananda, that true source of unconditional fulfillment, that true source of contentment is within us, is we ourselves as Atma. So the nature of Satchit Ananda, that Ananda is our true nature, which is completely unaffected by whatever is going on in our mind, by the sorrow that's going on in our mind because of depression or a life event. But without addressing, and I think sometimes people who come to Vedanta come at a time when they are going through some struggles in their life, which is not a bad thing, but they come to seek a solution to their struggles, to the situational struggle through Vedanta. And sometimes it works, but many times it doesn't. So if you come to Vedanta to get rid of your mental illness or a deep depression you're going through, Vedanta is not going to solve it right away. Vedanta takes a lot of time for the teachings to really go in. So the suggestion is first you address your emotional, whatever's going on in your mind. It doesn't have to be a linear. You can come to Vedanta, obviously. But knowing that until whatever struggles you're going through in your mind, until they are addressed fairly well, Vedanta doesn't go in. Because we come back to the same loop of why I'm struggling. Until you recognize the fundamental problem, Vedanta will not have a solution. So get whatever help you need. And unfortunately, psychotherapy and going to a mental health professional, even though it has come a long way, there is still some taboo associated with it, and it's a shame. Because just as if you have a physical illness like diabetes, I think of this all the time, you have diabetes, are you going to be ashamed of it and not go to the doctor? Are you going to not take medications for it? If the body and mind are as unreal, if the mind is as unreal or as much a mithya as the body, why do we hesitate to get mental help, help for mental, for problems related to the mind, when we are okay to get help for problems related to the body? So we have to really move away from the stigma, let go of the stigma, that many of us, and I think it's more prevalent in Indian cultures because of what will other people say? What will other people think? Other people can think whatever they want. They are not going through your struggles. They are not dealing with what difficulties you're dealing with in your life. Let them think whatever they want. They are not going to get the help. They're just... And many times other people have much more problems than you do, and you don't know about it. So getting help for mental illness is really very crucial to go anywhere in life, not only in the spiritual field, in your studies here, but in being living a meaningful life, just in the worldly sense as well. Kim Laghavam, what is easy, what is not difficult? So what is quick, what is easy? Yancha is begging or asking, like that prarthana. Begging or of us or asking. Asking who? Adhamma. Adhamma means very low or vile or the lowest rung of society. I don't like to use that word. You know, the people who... Adharmic people. That would be a better way to translate. So, adhamato yancha, asking adharmic people for help or begging from them. It's like asking a thief for money. If you ask a bank robber for money, what money is he going to give you? He or she is going to give you the money that he's got from robbing a bank or doing an adharmic action. So the money that you get will not be from a dharmic source, unless the thief is like Robin Hood, so steals from the rich and gives to the poor. But even that, I don't know whether that's dharmic or adharmic. Kim jivitam, kim jivitam, anavadyam, anavadyam, kim jadyam, kim jadyam, pathatopi ab anabhyasah, pathatopi anabhyasah. Kim jivitam, jivitam is life, jiva. What is life? Here it implies what is a good life, what is a worthy life, what makes life worthwhile. Anavadyam. There is, for those of you who have the PDF, there is a typo in that word. It should be the, not the. I think it says the, D-H-A in the PDF. So it's anavadyam. Avadya means that which is low or inferior or imperfection. So anavadyam, anavadya is that which is blameless, faultless, immaculate. How can this be achieved? How can we make our life worthwhile? By living a dharmic life, doing the right thing. Obviously, this is at the relational, transactional level, vyavaharika level, because, you know, in our day-to-day dealings with people, in our day-to-day dealings with our own life, we can learn to be more dharmic. But at the ultimate level, we have to recognize that there is our true self as Atma is already anavadyam, is already blameless. There's nothing that we can do. There is nothing that we need do to make Atma pure or blemishless. And Kim Jadyam, what is unintelligent? What is foolishness? What is stupidity? And the answer is anabhyasa. Abhyasa means study or practice. Anabhyasaha is not studying, not practicing. Pathataha api. Even though when taught, even though we have learned, not practicing, not imbibing the teachings, even when taught. And there is the story of Ravana. You know, most of you know of the Ramayana. Ravana was this 10-headed demon. He was actually quite a scholar. He was known to have studied all the shastras, the smriti, the shruti, smriti, puranas, even tantras. He knew all the four Vedas. He was an ardent devotee of Lord Shiva. He was a great warrior. He defeated many, many kings. He was such a scholar. Even with all this, so having studied all this, he was not able to keep his desires in check. He fell for Sita, who was already quote-unquote somebody else's wife, and he couldn't keep in check his desire to own her as his own. And that led to the whole Ramayana battle and ultimately to his downfall. So even though Ravana was such a scholar, even though he had studied, he did not practice Shravana Manana Nididhyasana that ultimately led to his downfall. And I don't remember where I heard this, maybe from Pooja Swamiji or some other teacher, or this something I just came up with myself. So the height, in my mind, the height of foolishness is doing something again and again in the same way and expecting a different result. And I'll give you my own example. You know, obviously we all need to be living healthy, you know, keep our exercise, weights in check. If you keep eating the same food again and again and you don't lose weight, duh, it's the height of foolishness. And you can put in your life whatever you're struggling with. Kim jagarati viveki ka nidra mudhata jantoho. So kaha jagarati, who is awake? Hopefully all of us. I don't see anyone sleeping here yet. Obviously it's not talking about the literal meaning of being awake. Who is awake in the sense, who is awake to life? Who is one who lives intelligently? And the answer is viveki, the one who has discernment or discrimination. And this viveka at three levels. One is the purushartha, artha, kama, artha, dharma, and moksha. One who has discernment, who knows what is important when in the four purushartas, kama, desires, artha, security, dharma, following righteousness, and moksha, the ultimate goal of life. This viveki can also be one who discerns what is adharma and dharma, what is to be done and what is not, the other way, what is dharma, adharma, what is to be done and what is not to be done. And at the third level, we saw this in one class, it comes in Tattva Bodha, nitya anitya vastu viveka, knowing what is real, what is your true nature as atma, what is satyam, that is nitya vastu, and what is anitya vastu, what is impermanent or changing. So the one who has clear priorities always is the one who is awake. And if you're asleep, you can wake yourself up and ask where your priorities are. Ka nidra, what is sleep? Obviously this again doesn't, this refers to one who is asleep to his priorities, his or her priorities, one who doesn't know, doesn't have the priorities clear. And mudhata jantoho, mudhata, the delusion of a jantu. Jantu literally meaning means a creature, and here it's talking about living beings. The delusion of all that most of us have, being asleep to reality, not being objective, and pursuing happiness out there. Constantly pursuing happiness out there, thinking that that's going to make us complete in here. And that's the mudhata that this verse is talking about. Nalani dalagata jalavat taralam kim. Nalani dalagata jalavat taralam kim. Yauvanam dhanancha ayuhu. Yauvanam dhanancha ayuhu. Kathayah punaha. Kathayah punaha. Kesheshinah kirana samaha. Kesheshinah kirana samaha. Sajjana eva. So in the first line, kim taralam. What is taralam? Means moving to and fro, constantly changing. And there's a big compound, nalani, dala, gata, jalavat. Jalavat, vat is like what? Like jalam, like water, like a water drop. Gata, which goes or which moves around. Dala, on a lotus leaf. On a leaf, nalani, of a lotus leaf. So this is like a drop of water. I learned something yesterday or the day before when I was preparing for this class. I didn't know there was something called the lotus effect. Anybody heard that? Yeah, we have the scientist there. So this lotus effect is when you put a drop of water on a lotus leaf. The lotus leaf is a very waxy substance. Most of you know this. You may not have known the term for this, like me, I didn't know. So that waxy surface is very hydrophobic and it repels water. So that water forms a drop and it keeps moving about on the drop. So it kind of is dancing on the water is dancing on the leaf, always ready to roll off anytime. So the question asks, nalini dalagata jalavat taralam kim? What is transient or temporary, like this ever-moving drop of water on a lotus leaf? And the answer is quite profound. Yauvanam, youth, dhanam, wealth, cha, and ayuhu. Ayuhu, ayus means life. So yauvanam, youth. We have few very young people here, but for those of us who are not young anymore, how old are you today? You don't have to tell me. It just feels like yesterday we were in our teens and 20s. And we are already in our 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s now. So that is very transient, very changing. The next word is dhanam, wealth. How steady is your portfolio now? Changing constantly right now. And life, ayuhu, life. Here today, gone tomorrow. We all know this too well. So life is like this fleeting drop of water on this ever-moving drop of water on this lotus leaf. And we saw a verse from the Bhajagovindam earlier. So there's another, this verse actually comes from a very similar verse in Bhajagovindam. Nalani dalagata jalam iti taralam. Very similar. Tadvat jibitam atishaya chapalam. So so just as this drop of water on this lotus leaf is shaking a lot, tadvat, in the same way, jivitam, our lives is atishaya chapalam. Chapalam means unsteady or moving, and extremely moving, extremely transient. And the next line of the verse says, vidhi, know this, vyadhi abhimana grastam, lokam shokahatam cha samastam. So know this, vidhi, lokam, for the people in this world, shokahatam, hatam, they are destroyed, samastam, completely destroyed by what? Vyadhi, disease, which can relate to life in this verse. Abhimana here in this verse is talking about pride or desire. Grastam, which is seized. So our lives are completely destroyed because we are seized by this desire, by disease, by yauvanam, dhanam, which are constantly changing, which are extremely temporary. So know that the whole truth, the whole world is full of unchanging things in our life. Our life is full. Our life itself is, I said that wrong. Know that our life is constantly changing. So does this mean we can never be free from our suffering and our sorrow? No. Until we recognize that we are complete, always complete as Atma, the youth, the dhanam, any blessed thing can never affect us as Atma, as our true self. And in spite of the trembles of up and down, we can be stable. We can get stability in our lives. And the second part of the verse, kathaya punaha, punaha. So tell me again or tell me further, ke kirana samaha, what are like the rays, kirana, shashinaha of the moon, who are like similar to the rays of the moon, meaning what is cooling? The moon has a very cooling effect. And the answer is sat janaha, good people or saintly people, because in their presence we can experience a sense of stability and calmness, going back to satsanga being such an important spiritual teaching. Due to the words of the satjana, we become more wiser and we are more getting closer to the truth of who we truly are. Ko narakaha paravashata kim saukhyam sarva sanga viratihiya. So kaha narakaha, what is hell? Of course, we said earlier, in Hindu concept, we don't have a physical place, but if we are going through a period of continuous pain and suffering in this life, that could be equated to naraka. For most of us, life is 50-50. There are periods of suffering. There are periods of happiness also. Unfortunately, when we are in the periods of that continuous suffering, it's hard to see those periods of happiness that have already been there in our life. So, what is naraka? What is like that? And the answer is paravashata. Vash means to control. So being under the control of para, of another. And I think of these people who are, you hear of these stories of somebody gets hired, I don't know now in this environment if it's possible, but people get hired from other countries to come and work in somebody's home here. And then the owner or the person who hires them takes away their passport. And it's almost like bonded labor. So that's very sad. So imagine if you are in a controlled situation like that, or somebody who is going through domestic violence in their own homes by a spouse. So, and I think most of you know, domestic violence is not about violence per se. It's about being in control. So the perpetrator of that violence wants control over his or her situation. So being in a position like that is like being in hell or being in naraka constantly. Another translation for being in naraka is any kind of addiction. Addiction to smoking, addiction to alcohol, drugs, addiction to our social media, addiction to pornography. Unfortunately, these are all very real things for many people. And again, we tend to label them. We tend to label them because if you know of such a person, saying, oh, they don't have self-control. And that is such a wrong label, because these addictions are actually now being shown to be diseases in the brain. The brain gets rewired because of this repeated pattern of behavior, and it's craving for that fix, because if you don't get that fix from the action that you're doing, the brain is, you're not settled, you're not comfortable. So any desires, any raga dvesha can make us feel under its control. So any raga dvesha, any desire, intense desire, which we are not able to control, quote unquote control, until the time we recognize that it is a desire, until we recognize that that desire, fulfillment of the desire, is not going to make us complete. So that is paravashata. And kim saukhyam, what is happiness or comfort, what is satisfaction? Ya sarva sanga viratihi. Ya, that by which rati means pleasure or enjoyment. Virati is cessation or stopping of all pleasure, of all attachments. Sarva sanga. Virati means stopping. From what? Sanga, from attachments. What attachments? All attachments. How do we do this? And I'll remind you of Puja Swamiji's and our Swamiji's binding desires versus non-binding desires. I think many of you have heard these terms. Just as a refresher, binding desires are those desires whose fulfillment or whose non-fulfillment makes us miserable. Like a binding desire for having a hot cup of coffee right now in this cold weather. We can't get up and go. Well, you can get up and go. I can't go and get up and get a coffee. But if I feel that drinking that cup of coffee right now is going to make me happy, that's a binding desire. Versus non-binding desire, if I want that cup of coffee and I know I can't get it, okay, it's fine. So that's a non-binding desire, the fulfillment or non-fulfillment of which doesn't really affect us. So sarva sanga viratihi is removing or detachment from all these binding desires. And not only things, so these desires come up for people also. When you love somebody, you can love them without being dependent on them for your internal sense of well-being. So literally, what it's saying, what kim saukhyam, what gives us satisfaction, is being objective to our own needs, recognizing the binding desires when they come in, recognizing that pursuing them is not going to make us happy permanently, and recognizing that if you have a million non-binding desires, what's the harm? So I think that's about time for this class. We will end with our prayer. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Thank you all for coming.